Welcome to Ask JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, for Sharon Mittman, Shlomo Ben Sarah, and Dorit Bat Sarah, and to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zeb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mittman, Dennis Shor, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. This is the program where, of course, we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers, but first I just want to briefly say that, as you know, our issue is the issue of preventing the creation of a so-called Palestinian state. There is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, but the creation of such a state would be national suicide for tiny Israel, God forbid, if she gave away her biblical heartland in Judea and Samaria. And so we support the Hilltop Youth, who are the only ones that are dealing with this issue in a serious way. By the way, there have been other articles that from people that are not part of the Hilltop Youth movement and aren't even sympathetic to the Hilltop Youth movement, who have been writing about the incredibly rapid Arab takeover of Judea and Samaria, because they're building illegally all over the place and just taking over huge amounts of land in Judea and Samaria, and how a so-called Palestinian state is being created right under our noses. So it's a very dangerous situation that we're faced with. And I just want to say that, you know, the Hilltop communities, the two of the leading Hilltop communities that we support, were destroyed 2 weeks in a row by the Israeli police under orders from the evil Israeli government. And this means that they have to rebuild, and they are rebuilding. And so they were up all night, night after night after. For 2 weeks, they've been going on like this, building, 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 and often staying up all night just building, and not getting enough sleep, and not getting the nutrition they need, just their focus and concentration on building so that they could save the hilltops and save the land of Israel. And so now one of them that we're in touch with happens to be, and he's really the leading spokesman for the Hilltop Youth community, he's now sick in bed because he got really run down from not sleeping enough and from being out in the bitter cold with the strong winds on those hilltops, and it's almost winter time now in Israel. And he's sick, and so of course we wish him a refuah shlema, complete recovery. And these guys are risking their health and their lives often, and we often tell them, please don't, get enough rest, get something to eat, do something, because they just completely sacrifice everything. They're so devoted to the land of Israel, so their love for the Jewish people in the land of Israel, and they sometimes listen to us, but usually they don't. And, you know, we try everything we can to try to urge them to get enough rest and not to go out and start building again, even when they're sick, because God forbid they could get pneumonia. All types of terrible things could happen. So, you know, we keep telling them, if you're not strong enough, if you're not healthy, you're not going to be able to help the Jewish people. And sometimes they listen to us. But anyway, let's just hope that this particular individual, who is a really great Jewish hero, I hope that he recovers. He's sick. He's in bed. He's sick. I hope it's not anything serious, but they're run down. They've been working day and night on building, and because they do all the building, all the construction by themselves. They do it all by themselves. So this is the type of devotion. This is devotion that you can't even imagine. This is dedication and self-sacrifice and love that you can't even picture, because we live in such comfort compared to what these heroic, sacrificing young Jews are doing. And you should know that, again, these are very intelligent, well-educated, very disciplined young Jews in their 20s and in their teens, with their wives and with their children there. Most of them have wives and children already, the ones in their 20s at least. And they could easily live very comfortable lives because they're very intelligent, very talented, very educated. They could easily earn a lot of money and live comfortable lives within pre-1967 Israel and just forget about Judea and Samaria and let the Arabs take over and have the Jewish people in grave danger and have the Jewish state in grave danger. God forbid. They won't do that. They won't do that. They stubbornly insist, and they're there for years under the most difficult and brutal conditions. I don't know how to explain to you how magnificent these people are and how proud they should make us to be Jews and to have brothers and sisters that are so committed and so idealistic and so truthful and so zealous. Every one of us should be filled with pride, and every one of us should be saying, this has to be a major priority in my life, helping these wonderful people. And believe me, God wants us to make that a priority in our lives. Hashem, God, wants us to help these people, because these people are the ultimate example of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctifying God's name. And when their homes are destroyed, and when they're beaten, and their wives are beaten, and I saw terrible scenes when they destroyed their homes, of women being beaten by the Israeli police, and one of them was hospitalized with black and blue marks all over her body after being beaten by the police and arrested. Why? Because she wants to live in the land of Israel. She just wants to settle in the land. That's become a crime now in Israel, because they're so anxious to give up everything and surrender and show the world how reasonable we are, and how compromising we are, and how flexible we are, and how we're willing to cave in to all the pressure. You know, they're willing to do these things at the expense, of course, of the survival of the Jewish people. I want us in JTF to do everything we can. I want everybody watching this video to decide they're going to do everything they can to send a message to the government of it, the evil government of Israel, and the news media in Israel, and the politicians in Israel, and the Hilltop Youth Heroes themselves, to send a message to all of them saying, their fight is our fight. Okay, let's go to the questions now from our great JTFers. And we're going to start off with, let's see what we have here. We're going to start off with the great Hirvatsky Noachai, who always has fantastic questions. And I see this week is no exception. This is going to be a long answer. He's going to get a long answer from this one. Maybe I'll even make a video out of my answer. I've done that before with his questions, because they're so good. But maybe we'll make a video, a separate video out of the answer to this, because this looks like it's going to be a long answer. Hirvatsky writes, and I quote, "Can you explain the oral law rule, quote, from the negative, one can infer the positive, using the seven Noahide commandments?" Oh, what a great question. What a great question. What does it mean, from a negative you can infer positive? What does that mean when the great rabbinic sages teach us that from something negative you can infer the positive? Well, I'm going to give you seven examples, because Hirvatsky wants us to use the seven Noahide commandments as examples. So we're going to give you seven examples using the seven commandments that the Torah gives to the Gentiles, to non-Jews. Non-Jews have at least seven commandments. And we're going to go through the seven and explain from the negative you can infer the positive. We're going to explain what that rule means. That's a rule, by the way, that's discussed in Nedarim and in other places extensively by the rabbinic sages. But let's do it with the seven commandments. The first commandment that Bnei Noach have is not to murder. Do not murder. Now, that's a negative, right? You're saying not to murder, not to do something is a negative commandment. But from that we can infer the positive. From that we can infer that not only are we not allowed to murder, but we also must act to save lives, that human life is precious, and that we must act to preserve lives. We must do what we can to preserve lives. That's the positive inference that we get from do not murder. And the second commandment is, for Bnei Noach, is do not steal. And we can infer from that that stealing, which is done in secrecy and dishonesty, because if people steal, they usually do it in secrecy and dishonesty, unless you're a black crook or a black shoplifter in San Francisco, then you can go in and steal hundreds of dollars, and it's now legal. It's now legal to shoplift and steal in San Francisco and other places. But generally speaking, people who steal are doing something dishonest and they're doing it in secrecy. And so that's the negative. Do not steal. You're not allowed to do that. But the positive we can infer from that is to create a world of honesty, to create a world where we respect and protect the property of others, and we care about the property of others. And we want to make this a better world for others as well. That's the positive we can infer from that. Now, the third commandment is, do not worship false gods. That's the negative. Do not worship false gods. The positive aspect that we infer from that is that we must worship the true God of the universe, the God of the Torah. Why is it so important that we worship the God? Why does God wants us to worship him? God doesn't need anything. God is absolutely perfect. He doesn't need us. He created us out of a sense of altruism and idealism. It's for our benefit and our good that we should worship the true God. Because if we don't worship the true God and we don't follow his guide to how we're supposed to live, if we don't follow his blueprint, we're hurting ourselves. We're defeating the purpose of creation. He knows what's best for us. If we follow his blueprint and follow his guide, we're doing what's best for us. And it will change us and make us better people. And so, do not worship false gods. That means we have to worship the true God of the universe, who is the God of Israel. And the fourth commandment, no sexual immorality. Adultery, fornication, perverted sex like homosexuality. All of that is forbidden is forbidden. And it's also forbidden. Now, I'm a little reluctant because the Bnei Noach, some of the rules on sex are a little more flexible for them than for the Jews in some areas. But generally speaking, certainly when the general concept of husband and wife and no adultery and certainly no perverse sex, all of that is part of their commandments. Do not engage in sexual immorality, which is their fourth commandment. That's the negative. And the positive is that we must create. We know we can infer from that. We can understand from that that we must create the type of sacred relations between a husband and his wife. A husband and a wife creating a relationship based on love. Creating a relationship based on having children and a family and having love. And having and the husband and wife being partners in life. Not just marriage is certainly not just for sex. Sex is not the main purpose. The main purpose, of course, sex is important in marriage. But the main purpose of the marriage is for the husband and wife to love each other and to be partners and to be loyal to each other and defend each other and want only the best for each other and to set an example for children, to have children and set an example for them and love the children and teach the children to live upright, righteous lives. So that's the fourth commandment. Because, you know, sexual immorality, it's not only a behavior that is self-destructive and addictive. Sexual immorality is selfishness. It's egotism. It's wanting to satisfy yourself. And in the end, what are you gaining out of sexual immorality? A moment of pleasure. If you really think about it, it really is crazy. And it really should be unfulfilling. And that's why sex addicts are never happy. They're never happy and they'll never be fulfilled. And the more sex they have, the more sex they want. And they're never happy. They don't even enjoy it after a while. They just feel a compulsion, just like an alcoholic or a drug addict or a gambling addict. But to live an idealistic life and a selfless life, the life between a husband and a wife where they love each other so much that they'll do anything for each other, that's the life that we should be striving for. And the fifth commandment is for Bnei Noach is not to eat a limb from a live animal. In other words, some people in some parts of the, certainly in ancient times, They used to just cut the leg off a horse and start eating it, or even if they cooked it, they would rip a leg off of an animal or do other barbaric things. Even to this day, you see people putting live lobsters in boiling water. I mean, that's very cruel. There are cruel things that people do. They rip the legs off of lobsters and while they're alive. We're allowed to eat animals. The Gentiles are allowed to eat animals. The Jews are allowed to eat animals. The Jews have to eat kosher food. The Gentiles are not required to eat kosher food. But both Jews and Gentiles are not allowed to tear the limbs or organs out of animals while they're still alive. This is very cruel. This is horrific behavior. This is sadistic, cruel, evil behavior. And God despises evil, cruel behavior. And so the negative is not to tear a limb off of a live animal. And the positive is that we must be kind to animals because they're God's creatures. We have to learn to appreciate God's creation and be kind to God's creation and love God's creation just as God loves his creation. And the fifth commandment is do not curse God. Not allowed to say something that's against God or cursing God, God forbid. And the positive we get out of that is that we must praise and bless God and thank God for having created a world that is so beautiful. What a loving God. I mean, the reason the world is so magnificently beautiful is because this is a loving God. He could have just given us he wants to test us. He wants us. He could just given us a plain world and given us a test and that's it. But instead, he created a beautiful world, a magnificent, breathtaking world because he's a loving and kind God. And we should bless God and thank God and be happy to be part of this mission in life. And if we do that, then we'll have eternal life, Bezrat Hashem, in the world to come, Ba'olam Haba. And the seventh and final commandment, out of the first seven commandments, the minimum seven that the Mei Noach are required to follow, is to set up courts and bring criminals to justice, bring the guilty and the offenders and criminals to justice, and to have a court system so that we don't have chaos in society, so that there's some sort of system of justice. The Gentiles are required to do that under the laws of B'nai Noach. That's the negative. Setting up courts and punishing people and punishing and putting away and stopping the cruel, the evil, the violent people in society. That we're required to do, but that's a negative action. You're stopping people, you're preventing things, you're punishing people. The positive we infer from that is that we should help the victims of crime and injustice and love the innocent people who are victimized in life. Loving the widow and the orphan is the one repeated theme over and over again. The widow and the orphan being the symbols of people in need, innocent people in need, who sometimes have a very difficult and painful life, and we have to feel their pain and care about them and love them. And they are our responsibility. That's one of the themes of the Torah, of the Tanakh being the Jewish Bible, of the prophets, the widow and the orphan, and the stranger. The stranger, by the way, the stranger in this case is the Jewish convert, in other words, a Gentile that converts to Judaism is the stranger. In the particular commandment in the Torah. But we have to love and care about the victims of injustice. And when the weak are pounced upon by strong and evil forces, we have to be there to defend them. And we have to be there to stand up for justice and to challenge injustice at all times. Anyway, that's explaining the oral Torah rule from the negative to the positive using the seven Noahide commandments. Thank you, Hirvatsky. And now we go to the great Nekama, who writes, and I quote, Dechaim, 1. In so-called smash-and-grab attacks, Schwarze hordes are descending on retail stores and stripping them clean of goods. Some of these hordes have 80 to 100 participants. It's like Vonsen cleaning or picking clean a dead carcass of meat. In many cases, there are dozens of getaway cars waiting outside to transport these criminals to safety. Most, if not all, of these cars have their license plates covered to avoid detection by closed-circuit cameras. I feel like I live in Haiti or Zimbabwe. What can be done to combat this horrible situation, unquote. It's unbelievable what the United States is turning into. It is turning into Haiti or Zimbabwe. It's just unbelievable. And again, in cities like San Francisco, the San Francisco City Council passed a law. They have laws and ordinances where they now forbid the police to make arrests. You're not allowed to arrest somebody who goes into a store and steals from the store. Up to a certain, I don't remember how many hundreds of dollars, but they're allowed to go in and steal, and nobody's allowed to arrest them or stop them, and the police are not going to arrest them or stop them from going into the store and just stealing. And you see, you can go on YouTube and check all this out in San Francisco and other cities in California, especially California is completely insane. They're allowing this to happen. And so what's happening? All the stores are closing. People are not going to have a place where they can shop anymore because stores are not going to stay open with these savages coming in and stealing all their goods and not paying for them. You can't have a functioning business like this. And they're not ashamed. They walk out proudly, smiling and stealing everything. And you have city governments like the San Francisco City Council who are voting to make this legal, who are saying, yeah, they have a right to do this. They have a right to go in the store and just take and steal whatever they want. So it is unbelievable. And that's different from what Nekama is referring. Nekama is referring to cases where they go in, where it is still illegal, and they're going in, and 80 to 100 of them are going in and just attacking descending, as Nekama writes here, descending on retail stores and stripping them of all their goods and walking out. Dozens of them just walking out with huge amounts of merchandise in their hands, stolen. Yeah, it's a bad, bad situation. The country, we keep going down this road, the country's going to become unlivable. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I think the United States is in very bad shape, and I think the reason is because of immorality. I think that people have become immoral and selfish and dishonest and callous. And I think that this leads to a complete breakdown in values in society. And of course, the vast majority of these, of the people involved in these cases are blacks. Because we've let them out of the cage. You let the gorilla out of the cage. This is what happens. I mean, you let them out of the cage and you let them go around and trample on people's rights. This is the type of society that we're facing. It's a bad situation. Nekama now writes too, I don't understand the uproar over Representative Lauren Boebert's joke about Ilhan Omar, Yimach Shma V'Zichra. Omar got away with making pure unadulterated anti-Semitic comments without any congressional censure or removal from her committees. Omar is a terrorist who also married her brother. On the other hand, Representative Boebert makes a funny joke and the media and the left wing demand her head on a platter. Please comment, unquote. Yeah, it's incredible. Representative Boebert, by the way, is a Republican congresswoman from Colorado, and she told a joke that Congresswoman Ilhan Omar from the Jihad Squad was a terrorist. Basically said that she's a terrorist. She's not. She supports, let me tell you something. If someone supports Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, they're a Nazi. They don't have to be a member of the Nazi Party. If they support the Nazis and support the Holocaust and support Hitler, that's a Nazi. Just like somebody who supports the communists is a communist. You don't have to be a member of the Communist Party to be a communist. Ilhan Omar supports all the Islamic terrorists and Arabs and mass murderers who want to exterminate Israel and who want to destroy the United States and want to take over the world. She supports all of that. She is a terrorist. And so I don't even think it was a joke. This congresswoman, this Republican congresswoman, said it as a joke. That she's in the elevator and security was concerned. I don't remember the exact, but she turned it into a joke. But it's not a joke. It's not a joke at all. She is a terrorist. But you're not allowed to criticize the evil ones. In other words, you're not allowed to tell the truth, but every lie and supporting the most evil people in the world, that's not only permitted, you're required to do that in order to get anywhere now in American society. That's what we've come to. Thank you, Nekama. And now we go to Ram 770, who's going to, this is going to take a couple of minutes. It's going to be translated from Hebrew to English, and the answer will briefly be given in Hebrew and English. I know most of our viewers don't speak Hebrew, so they're not going to understand what I'm saying, but this will just be a couple of minutes, so just bear with us, and I am going to translate what I'm saying. Ram writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim Hayakar Mashlomcha. Hello, dear Chaim, how are you? Haim Chashavta Lasot Reayon Be'arutz Esrim Legabei Haseruv Ha'aliyah Shelcha. Have you ever thought, Ram is asking me, have you ever thought of doing an interview on Channel 20 about your Aliyah? Ram, ken chashavti al ze, ve'itachen she'yom yavo ve'naase et ze. Well, I just told Ram that we have thought about it, and maybe the time will come when we will do it. By the way, Channel 20 that Ram is referring to is like the Fox News of Israel. And Ram now writes, and I quote, מה דעתך על זה שיש לי הרבה קשרים במערכת הפוליטית? איך ידעת שזה בזכותי קשרתי אותך לחבר הכנסת לשעבר מהליכוד? And Ram now writes, what is your opinion about my connections to people in the political system? And how did you know that it was thanks to me that I connected you to a former member of the Knesset? And Ram is referring to the fact that he put me in touch with a Knesset member from the Likud, who's no longer in the Knesset, but was last year. This was last year. And this Knesset member, I sent him my material and my information, and he intervened on my behalf. He tried to get me, it didn't work, but he tried to help me with my Aliyah situation. He did intervene on my behalf. He wrote letters on my behalf and tried to help us. And Ram was the one who got all this going. Ram, ani yodea she'ata achrai la'davar hazeh, ve'shuv ani modelecha al zeh, ki be'emet ata nisita la'azor li, ve'shuv modelecha. And I just told him I thank him for that, and I know that he's responsible for getting that Knesset member involved. And finally, Ram writes, and I quote, Ani zocher et ze, sheze haya lifnei shana chag Hanukkah, sameach lecha, ulechol hamishpacha shelcha, ulechol am Yisrael. I remember that was a year ago, Ram writes, and he writes, Happy Hanukkah to you and to your family and to all of the Jewish people. Ani mode lecha, Ram, chag sameach lecha, chag Hanukkah sameach lecha, velamishpacha shelcha, ולכל עם ישראל, מודה לך. And I just told him that I just wished him a happy Hanukkah and for him and his family and the Jewish people as well. Now we go to our good friend Yimach Shmo to Islam, who writes, and I quote, in your opinion, which pro wrestler did the worst deed? Stone Cold Steve Austin, Chris, now I don't know how to pronounce this because I don't know anything about, I don't follow pro wrestling. Yimach Shmo to Islam, so I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Chris Benoit, is it Benoit or Benoit? Sometimes they don't pronounce the O-I-T in French because it looks like a French name. Chris Benoit, New Jack, look up mass transit incident, you'd be horrified. Okay, these are all people involved in pro wrestling, I assume. I don't know anything about any of them. I don't follow it, Yimach Shmo to Islam, but I do know that pro wrestling is fake. I know that this is staged, so-called entertainment. I don't understand why people are entertained by this. First of all, if it was real, it would be even worse. People trying to hurt each other and trying to fight with each other and trying to do damage to each other. Why would somebody enjoy seeing people hurting each other? I never got that. I mean, that's a sick thing, a very sick aspect of human behavior. Why would somebody enjoy seeing somebody get hurt? Whether it's in a boxing ring or a wrestling match or anything, this is just cruelty for the sake of cruelty. And no, I don't follow. But it just so happens that pro wrestling is actually fake. And yes, people do get seriously injured though, because they do things, they bang into each other, and they do other things to each other. They sometimes hurt each other, even though it's rehearsed and it's supposed to be, and it's all planned and it's all programmed and it's all fake, and it's not a real challenge. It's not a real, it's just acting. It's all acting. Still, they hurt each other. They do hurt each other, and it's a high risk. It's a high risk type of entertainment for them. Sorry, Yimach Shmo, I don't know anything about these individuals, but I do know that this type of cruelty says something about the people who are fans of this. Why would anybody be a fan of this type of wanting to see people hurt each other? For no reason. That's entertainment, hurting each other? This is like the ancient Romans and the ancient Greeks and the ancient Philistines and their Colosseums torturing people to death. And the crowd cheering and roaring while somebody's being tortured to death. It's just beyond my understanding. I'm certain that there's no question God does not approve of that type of behavior. Thank you, Yimach Shmo to Islam. And now we go to our great friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, can you discuss Kirsten Gillibrand in more detail?" Unquote. The only thing I can say, she's a senator from New York. She pretends to be a feminist, but she has a double standard when it comes to left-wing politicians committing offenses against women. She's a big phony, always was a big phony. And again, I think I told you last week that she pretended to be a conservative Democrat, quote-unquote, when she was in upstate New York, a politician in upstate New York as a congresswoman, because she was representing a relatively Republican district. And now she moved all the way to the left, and then she ran for president, made it, and got. I mean, she. I think she had to pull out, in fact, before there were any actual any votes counted, even, because she was getting zero support. So it's just. I mean, it's an embarrassment that the state of New York elects such unbelievable zeros like her to the U.S. Senate. And now Binyamin writes, and I quote, "Discuss the following U.S. senators from New York." All right, let's see if I even know anything about these people. Let me try. Robert F. Wagner. Robert F. Wagner, I don't know much. I don't know much about him. I know that his son was the mayor of New York for 12 years. But I don't know very much about him as a senator. I really can't say. John Foster Dulles, but if he was a senator from New York, he couldn't be good, because New York is very left-wing and always has been. John Foster Dulles. John Foster Dulles was a senator briefly from New York, I think in the early, I think early 1950s or late 19, I don't know if it was the late 40s or early 50s. But then he became Secretary of State, very anti-Semitic Secretary of State under Dwight Eisenhower. He pressured Israel to surrender the Sinai. Israel liberated the Sinai in the 1956 Sinai War. There was a war in 1956 between Israel and Egypt, and Israel liberated the entire Sinai in 4 days. And John Foster Dulles led the campaign, together with Dwight Eisenhower, who was an anti-Semite, and Vice President Richard Nixon, another anti-Semite. They all led a campaign of massive pressure on Israel to give up the Sinai, which was a terrible thing to do. Israel should have refused to do it, but they did it right away. They caved in and gave the entire Sinai. They gave the entire Sinai to Egypt, and this was in 1956, 1957. The war was in 1956, in October 1956, and they surrendered in early 57. They surrendered the entire Sinai, which was a terrible tragedy for Israel. John Foster Dulles, the anti-Semite, played a big role as Secretary of State in doing this. He was always anti-Israel. He was always supporting the Arabs. He was just a Jew hater. And Binyamin Yisrael writes now, Herbert H. Lehman. Oh, he was scum. Oh, he was scum. He was the first Jewish governor of New York. And he was governor, he succeeded Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was elected president in 1932, and Herbert Lehman was elected governor that year to succeed Roosevelt. Lehman, the ultimate self-hating Jew. The ultimate self-hating Jew. I don't remember exactly how long he was governor. I don't know if it was for 10 years, 12 years. I mean, he was governor for quite a while. And a very left-wing governor, of course. But what is especially unforgivable about this monster is that he was a governor and then a U.S. senator. He was governor and U.S. senator. And at a time when he had tremendous influence in the Democrat Party and tremendous influence with FDR, with Roosevelt, during the Holocaust, he did nothing, nothing to save 6 million Jews. And in fact, the opposite. He helped Roosevelt. He helped Roosevelt help the Nazis carry out the Holocaust, because American foreign policy made the Holocaust possible. If the United States had bombed the rail lines leading to Auschwitz and had bombed the concentration camps, we could have stopped the Holocaust dead in its tracks. And we could have also made clear to the Nazis that they're going to be hanged after the war if they commit war crimes. And all types of things could have been done. The Holocaust would never have happened. The German Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, always tested the waters before they did anything. Kristallnacht was a test. And all the other things they did, they always tested the waters. When they had the Nuremberg Laws and then Kristallnacht in the 1930s, they were testing and seeing how the world would react. When they saw that nobody gives a damn, no matter what they do to Jews, nobody gives a damn, nobody's going to protest, they saw they could get away with anything. So they saw that they could murder millions of Jews and get away with it, which is exactly what happened. And Herbert Lehman was part of that evil policy. He didn't do anything to save the Jews, and in fact sabotaged any efforts to save the Jews and back Roosevelt, which is another example of why we should never, never, never support the Jewish politician that runs. The Jewish politician running for office is the worst enemy of his own people. Better to support a Gentile anti-Semite than a Jewish anti-Semite, than the Jewish politician, because they always bend over backwards against Israel and against their own people. That's Herbert Lehman, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro. And Jacob Javits, another horrible beast. This pig... Remember I was telling you about Eisenhower and Nixon and Dulles pressuring Israel to give up the Sinai? Jacob Javits supported that. He was a Jewish senator from New York, a big Jewish senator, and the Jews are so proud. We have a senator. Oh, it's so good. And meanwhile, this piece of garbage, he supported Eisenhower's pressure on Israel. He supported all the attempts to get Israel to do suicidal things. He was the worst. The worst. And the Jews loved him because he always said, I support Israel. Yeah, he pretended to he would just make statements saying he supports Israel and that he's pro-Israel. What good does it do to say I'm pro-Israel, I support Israel? And everything he did was anti-Israel. He stabbed Israel in the back a million times as a senator. He was terrible. And also, by the way, Lehman, Javits, the two guys I just met, super leftists. Even though Javits was a Republican, he was a super left-wing Rockefeller Republican. And the next one is Alphonse D'Amato. Oh, what a phony. Just a phony. I mean, better him than a Jew, than the self-hating Jew, but he was a phony. A corrupt phony. A corrupt phony senator who never really stood for anything. And Schmuck Schumer is the last one on the list. Oh, what a piece of subhuman filth. Filth. The lowest of the low. He's now the head of the Democrats in the U.S. Senate. And this is a guy who pretended he said he was going to protect Israel from Iran and the Iran deal, and he's against the Iran deal, and he's against, and very dangerous, the nuclear Iran. We got to worry about a nuclear Iran. When Trump backed out of the Iran deal, one of the few slightly better things that Trump did than the Democrats, he backed it, which wasn't that much of a big deal, but he backed out of the Iran deal, Trump. Yeah, and by the way, it took him a long time to do it. The other Republicans running for president all promised to do it on day one. He did it way into his presidency when half of his presidency was over, and he did it half-heartedly. I mean, Trump was a liar and a phony, always was, and Kushner and all the other self-hating Semites that surrounded him were all hideous frauds. But Trump, when he did finally back out, which is the most minor thing you can do. I mean, what has to be done is that we have to bomb Iran's nuclear bomb-making program and destroy it militarily. That's the only solution. But when Schumer, when Trump did do that, Schumer condemned Trump and said we have to continue the Obama-Iran deal of giving Iran tens of billions of dollars even while they're building nuclear bombs. We should give Iran tens of billions of dollars. Reward them. This is Schmuck Schumer, the Jewish senator from New York. And, you know, just one scene that just out of a million different issues, on every issue he's bad. On every issue he is a catastrophe, Schumer. But I'll never forget the press conference where Schmuck Schumer actually started, you can look it up on Google, he actually started to cry because he was in a press conference with Muslims who want to immigrate to the United States, who want to come to the United, Muslim illegal aliens want to sneak into the United States, Muslims who want to destroy the United States and who certainly hate Israel and the Jewish people. And Schmuck Schumer, he got so emotional about how important it is that we help the Muslims sneak into the United States and take over the United States. This was so important to him that he started to cry about the pain and suffering of the Muslim immigrants who want to come to America, how important that he started to cry. He got so emotional to show his enthusiastic support for massive Islamic immigration to the U.S. and for backing the Muslims against Israel and against America. That's Schmuck Schumer. Yimach Shmo v'zichro Shem Reshayim Yirkav, which means may his name and memory be obliterated, may the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Binyamin. Now we go to Naches, the great Naches, who is really one of the great JTFers of all times. And I know Naches for many years. And he really is a great, great person. Naches writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, 1, please expound upon what are referred to as the 10 lost tribes, unquote. Well, we had 12 tribes in Israel. We had Yaakov Avinu, Jacob our father, had 12 sons. And each son eventually became a tribe, became one of the tribes of Israel. And 10 of the tribes, but the kingdom of Israel split in two. And 10 of the tribes were part of the kingdom of Israel, and 2 of the tribes, Yehuda and Binyamin, were part of the kingdom of Judah, Yehuda. And so we had the 10 tribes in the north, and then to the south we had Judah, we had Yehuda. And these 10 tribes eventually were overrun by Ashur, which is the Assyrian Empire, because they were idol-worshipping. They murdered the Jewish prophets. They were very evil. The kings there were very evil. And the people, unfortunately, supported this. Unfortunately, they supported it. So what happened was, to punish them and to rid the land of idolatry and murder and all the other terrible things that were going on, God allowed the Ashur, which is Assyria in English, Ashurim are the Assyrians. He allowed them to come in and destroy the kingdom of Israel. And they did come in and they wiped out the kingdom of Israel. And they took the ten tribes of Israel and removed them from the land of Israel. They brought them back to territories far away from Israel that they controlled in their empire, and forcibly assimilated and converted them. So that's why they're 10 lost tribes, because they're no longer part of the Jewish people. They left the Jewish people. They were forced out of Israel. They were expelled. Now, there may be traces of some of them that did stay, that were not swept up by the Assyrian occupation and the Assyrian conquest of the land of Israel. Some of them did stay, and if they did stay, it's possible that there are remnants of the 10 lost tribes among us. But the vast majority were swept away and are no longer Jewish. And that's what the 10 lost tribes basically refer to. Naches now writes, and I quote, 2, do you believe that it is possible that when Mashiach comes, the world at large will embrace Judaism, the true faith? Unquote. Well, when the Mashiach comes, the wicked are going to be eliminated. eventually they're going to disappear. God is going to destroy the wicked. And so the people who will be left will be the righteous Gentiles and the righteous Jews, and they will embrace Judaism. The righteous Gentiles, according to Judaism, are required, as we mentioned earlier in this program, to observe the 7 commandments of Bnei Noach. And the Jews, of course, have 613 commandments. When I say 613 commandments, people want to faint when they hear that. 613 commandments. Wow. But the vast majority of the commandments are either part of the holy, part of the rituals in the holy temple, or commandments referring to what a high priest has to do, or what a king has to do, or commandments involving prophets. In other words, the number of commandments that actually involve us from day to day, from on a day to day basis, is actually a much, much smaller number, But the total, if you include what the Kohanim, what the priests in the temple, all the things we have to do in Beit HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple, and everything a king has to do, and all the laws about the land of Israel, and all the other laws, if you include, and agricultural laws, and if you include all the laws, the total is 613 for the Jews, and 7 for the Gentiles. And yes, the people will, those people who will survive, who will not be destroyed with the wicked, those people will accept Judaism and the God of Israel, yes. Thank you, Nachas. And now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, which U.S. president do you think did more for Israel, Donald Trump or Richard Nixon? Joe, I think the question would be better phrased if you asked which U.S. president do you think did more to Israel, Donald Trump or Richard Nixon. They were both terrible for Israel. Every U.S. president has been bad for Israel, because U.S. policy, with all the presidents we've elected, has been based upon Arab oil, Arab petrodollars. They don't want to antagonize 1.5 billion Muslims in the world. So, you know, U.S. policy has been designed to appease and placate the Arab world and the Muslim world, which of course demands that Israel commit suicide. So we have never had a president that's been good for Israel. We've had presidents that have been very bad for Israel. We have presidents that have been lesser of the evils. Ronald Reagan was probably the lesser of the evils of all the presidents. Donald Trump was a very bad president for Israel. Very bad. Okay, the Trump so-called peace plan would be national suicide for Israel. Trump advocated creating a so-called Palestinian state and wanted to turn Israel into Swiss cheese. He wanted to even take away land that we have in the tiny pre-1967 borders of Israel. You look at the map of what Trump wanted to do. It was horrific what he wanted to do to Israel. What he and Netanyahu immediately accepted it, which shows you the danger we're in. What saved us in the end was the fact that the Arabs rejected the Trump peace plan, the Trump suicide plan. Thank God they rejected it. Otherwise, we would have been in tremendous danger. As far as Richard Nixon is concerned, I could do a 12-hour show on all the terrible things Nixon did to Israel, from the Rogers so-called peace plan, where he demanded Israel go back to the pre-1967 suicide borders, to him cutting off aid to Israel repeatedly to pressure Israel, to him allowing and pressuring Israel to allow the Soviets to put thousands of missiles along the Suez Canal, which eventually were used in the Yom Kippur War. Those Soviet missiles shot down huge numbers of Israeli planes in the Yom Kippur War and changed the course of that war, thanks to Nixon and his policies, his terrible policies. And then in the Yom Kippur War, he and the ultimate monster, Henry Kissinger, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav, the ultimate example of a Jewish Nazi. Henry Kissinger is a Jewish Nazi. Henry Kissinger said, if they put Soviet Jews in gas chambers, we don't give a damn about that. We're not concerned about that. They could put Soviet Jews in gas chambers. We're not supposed to be concerned about that. That's what Kissinger said in the tapes that were released between conversations that he had with Nixon. I mean, he was the ultimate horror. He pressured Israel not to strike first in the Yom Kippur War. 3,000 Jews were murdered because of him in the Yom Kippur War. Then he pressured Israel to give up land. Then he started the process of Israel giving up salami-like, giving up portions of the land, giving up part of Sinai and part of the Golan Heights. And he started that whole process, Kissinger, and that was under Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was the president who backed him and put him in charge and made him first National Security Advisor and then Secretary of State. Nixon was a catastrophe for Israel. And please don't tell me that Nixon helped Israel in the Yom Kippur War by sending them weapons. The arms lift that he gave. Another myth of Jews. He finally sent weapons to Israel in an arms lift from the United States after Israel already turned the tide in the war and was already winning the war. That's when he decided he's going to send the weapons and pretend that he's not trying to destroy Israel. Because in the war, the Nixon-Kissinger policy was for Israel to lose the war. They did everything they can for Israel to lose the war and to hurt and undermine Israel during that war. So Trump, Nixon, terrible for Israel, both of them. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And now we go to another good friend of ours, Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, has there been any well-known people that you don't like but change their views enough for you to like them? Examples. Oh, Chicago Jew, you put me in a bad position here because I can't think of anybody like that who's well-known. I can think of people in my own personal life that I've known, people on a personal level that I've known that did change, that people that in some case I became very close to some people who at first I thought were bad people, did bad things, and then changed their ways and became good people. In my personal life, I could think of quite a few examples of people that I've seen that happen to. You know, we believe in tshuva. Tshuva means repentance. We believe Jews and Gentiles can change their ways and can become good. Even if people are doing bad, they can become good if they choose to, because everybody has bechira chofshit, which means free will. Now, there's also a concept in Judaism where God says that he hardened Pharaoh's heart. What does that mean? That means that God took free will away from Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, because Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, was so evil and so cruel and so murderous toward the Jews that God wanted to punish him and wanted justice against him, and so didn't want him to repent, wanted to make sure that he gets the full punishment. So there are times when God does take free will away as a punishment for the evil. For evil people, sometimes he will take their free will away when they cross a certain road or cross a certain red line. Sometimes God will take their free will away to give them the punishment they deserve. But generally speaking, unless God does that, people have free will. And so yes, there are people who are bad who eventually become good. But famous people or well-known people, I can't think of any, Chicago Jew. I'm sorry, I can't. Because the well-known people and the famous people, you know that I don't like politicians and I don't like establishment people. I'm an anti-establishment person. I think the establishment is terrible. And so, you know, I can't think of anybody who's well known. I can only tell you in general, in my own personal life, I have known people that have changed for the good. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to a good friend of ours, whom we're so happy to see back on the forum, Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, what is Antifa? Are they a bunch of losers who hate success, morality, decency, and the Jews? Unquote. They're all of that. they hate. Well, you know, they're part of the extreme left. People call themselves anarchists, and they support communism and socialism and Marxism, and they don't even know what the hell they support. They're just, in most cases, they're rich, spoiled kids. If they're white. If they're black, they're usually just anti-white racists and anti-Semites. But if they're white kids involved with Antifa, if they're white young people involved, they're usually just spoiled white kids who come from wealthy families and who decide to rebel and decide to join this hideous organization, which is supposed to be anti-fascist. They are the biggest fascists in the world. I mean, they claim they're against Nazis and fascists. They are Nazis, and they're left-wing Nazis and left-wing fascists, and very anti-Israel and very anti-Semitic. They're a horrible, evil group that's aligned with every evil organization, every communist, terrorist, Islamic terrorist, Jew-hating, white-hating, or America-hating organization you can think of. They're aligned with all of them. So they really are a true example of evil. And Confederate Kahanist now writes, are historically black colleges any good, or are they just glorified middle schools? God bless and thanks. Interesting question, Confederate Kahanist. Although I think that most middle schools, I think the IQ of most middle school students is higher than the IQ of graduates of black colleges. the difference between the IQs of intelligent whites who go to college and blacks who go to college is so huge. The difference is so gigantic. It's just, it's unbelievable. They've taken tests. There have been times when there were tests taken where blacks were admitted into medical schools with averages in the 20s and 30s, getting 20 or 30% of the answers right. And the same schools that gave blacks full scholarship into medical schools, these are people that are in our hospitals and that become surgeons and that treat somebody with you. If you get, you don't have a choice when you, if you're injured in an emergency or you have to go emergency to hospital, which happened to both of my parents and happened to other people I've known, and you have to, you don't have a choice. You got to be hospitalized. You're right away. You get the first doctor on duty is the one that's going to treat you. There's nothing you can do about that, right? At least in the case of my parents, there was nothing we could do. And you'll get doctors who are completely incompetent, sometimes semi illiterate. I mean, it's a nightmare. It's just an incredible nightmare. And the same schools that rejected, the same schools that gave full scholarships and accepted black students who were getting averages on their test scores in their 20s and 30s, rejected white students who were getting scores in the 90s. White and Jewish and Asian students who were getting in the 90s were rejected by these schools, but black students who were in the 30s were accepted. That's what we have become in this country. That's what we become. And then the blacks have the nerve, the unmitigated audacity, unmitigated chutzpah, to say that they're discriminated against. As Rabbi Kahana said, they're the eternal malcontents, the blacks and the Arabs. The eternal malcontents. No matter what you do, no matter how much you give into them, they're never happy. You give them the whole country, which is what basically is happening now. Hand over the whole country to them, and they're still not happy. They're still saying, you're racist, this and that. Never, never, never happy. Eternal malcontents. Thank you so much, Confederate Kahanist. And we go now to Vintage JTF, who is new to the forum. Welcome to our forum, or at least new in terms of posting. I see that the Vintage JTF says that he's not new to JTF, but new to posting. Vintage JTF writes, and I quote, "Greetings, Chaim, newly registered but 20-year supporter and observer of JTF. Thank you for returning the Ask JTF segment. Two questions about your former television co-hosts. One, could you share a never-before story about the late Yosef Ben Meir, Zal means Zichrono Livracha, which means may his memory be blessed. How do you think he'd want his life remembered?" Well, you know, Yosef Ben Meir, you know, he, and this was even in the 1990s and after that, Yosef Ben Meir was a big supporter of the Hilltop Youth. He loved the concept of the Hilltop Youth. And then it was just in the starting stages, that whole movement to get Jews to go out and make sure that we settle in the land of Israel and not allow the Israeli government to deny Jews their right to settle in their homeland. And basically, by the way, what the Hilltop Jews do to protest that sometimes is a form of civil disobedience sometimes. They'll go there and they'll settle there. This is like civil disobedience. It's like what Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi are praised for. The Hilltop Youth are condemned and called terrorists for just wanting to settle in their own land. Whereas the Arab terrorists, the Arab mass murderers, who openly vow to exterminate the whole Jewish people, are praised and are called partners for peace. This is the insanity we have. But Yosef Ben Meir, he was very committed to the land of Israel. And he made Aliyah in the last years of his life. Unfortunately, when he was on a bus in Jerusalem, he suffered a heart attack and passed away. He was in his late 70s when he passed away. But Yosef Ben Meir was very, very committed to the land of Israel. And you know, he always did it with a British accent. He always spoke with a British accent. And he used to give it to them on those on the programs we did on TV. Oh, did he give it to them? I mean, he was just a great host. I think he'd want his life to be remembered as someone who loved the people of Israel and the land of Israel and was loyal to Israel and to the Jewish people and to the Jewish cause. And he should be remembered that way, because that was the essence of what he was. Thank you. Oh, Vintage JTF has one other question. I'm sorry. Two, an update on David Ben Moshe. Anything noteworthy since he last appeared with you, unquote. David Ben Moshe is active on the internet. He uses different names on the internet because they ban people, and you have to use different names because all these other, Facebook and all these other sites are so, these are like Nazi sites. They have Nazi-like censorship against anyone who tells even the slightest amount of truth. So, he has different names and different, but he and his wife, he's married, and he and his wife, lovely lady, the two of them, very lovely and very talented woman, by the way, his wife, the two of them are quite active on the internet, and they respond and they try to respond to people and try to and try to get the truth out as best as they can. So he watches what we do. He monitors. He still keeps up with JTF and so does his wife, and they're still active in their own way by responding to dozens of different people all the time on the internet. Thank you, Vintage JTF. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, hope all is well. One, your thoughts about the Syrian Orthodox woman marrying a Muslim Lebanese, impersonating himself to be a Jew. The marriage was later annulled. The Jewish community is safe. The man came out admitting he lied, but had no ill intentions, as he was always in love with becoming a Jew and in love with the woman he lied to, unquote. Yeah, well, when he says that he had no ill intentions, he's lying again. there's a saying, when you shake hands with a Muslim, you have to count your fingers after you shake hands with a Muslim. Which is a saying, by the way, that Yosef Ben Meir was fond of repeating on our television show. This was someone who is actually being investigated now by the FBI because he had connections one way or another with Muslim terrorist organizations. So his intentions were clearly nefarious, and we have to remember that this is, although this particular case got a lot of attention, we got to remember that in Israel this happens all the time. Arabs in Israel who grow up in Israel, Arab Muslims who hate Israel, hate the Jewish people, want to kill every last Jew, are filled with hatred, burning with hatred toward the Jewish people, and they pass themselves off as Jews because they're fluent in Hebrew. They grow up in Israel, they go to Israeli schools, they're taught Hebrew, they speak Hebrew fluently. And so they pass themselves off as Jews. Mahmoud becomes Moshe. And Ahmed becomes Avraham. And this is how they pass themselves off. And it works. And what happens is Jewish girls go out with them and fall in love with them. And then when it's too late and the Jewish girls are ready, and this is usually assimilated Jewish girls, they're already too late, they're already in love with them, they're young and they're blinded by love. And after they're already in love with them, then it's revealed that he really wasn't a Jew, he was a Muslim. He then reveals it, and the girl, in many cases, the Jewish girl is already in love, and she agrees to go and live with him or become a Muslim or convert to Islam, to marry him because she's in love. I mean, these are the type of tragedies we see happening in Israel, which is why we have to do what our great rabbi, our great leader, Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, told us to do, which is they must go. I mean, we've got to get the Arabs out. We've got to encourage them to leave Israel, because as long as they're there, this threat is a very real threat. There are tens of thousands of Jewish women living like slaves, married to Muslim men who beat them and rape them and torture them and hold them like prisoners in Arab villages, and nobody does anything about it. I mean, there is a group, Lehava, that tries to do some rescue efforts, but This is a very, very, a very big problem in Israel, and until we get the Arabs out, we're endangering the lives of many, many Jews, especially Jewish women. And Dr. Dan now writes, and I quote, "Two, should children get the COVID vaccine? Thank you and God bless you and your family." Well, you know, on the one hand, children are very unlikely to become seriously ill from the COVID virus. Very unlikely. There have been rare cases, but it's rare. On the other hand, there's a problem because children, when they get COVID, they can spread it to adults who can become very sick. I can tell you that someone that I know very well, who was a teacher in the public school system, got COVID from his students, from his pupils. This is a Jewish guy, teaches in the public school system, and he an Orthodox Jew, and he got the COVID from his students. They weren't sick, but they had COVID, and they gave it to him because he was going in to teach every day, and children can spread it to adults. He got sick, and then other people around him got sick, and eventually my mother got sick and passed away because of that. So this is a threat to people. As long as this disease is allowed to run rampant, we're in danger here. And again, I have to say, I don't understand it, that people that I normally have such respect for are opposed to vaccinations. I can't understand it. I can't understand the anti-vax people from people who are, all right, I know there are a lot of people who are nuts in the world, and most of the anti-vax people are nuts. But there are people that I know that are normally very logical and that I have great respect for, and they're taken in by this. I just can't understand it. If everybody got vaccinated, this disease, this epidemic would be behind us. This pandemic would be behind us. It would still exist to a certain degree, just like the flu and other things. But for the most part, we would be finished with this. They are driving this disease, the unvaccinated. Over 90% of the hospitalizations and over 90% of the deaths are unvaccinated people. And you know, and I see people that normally I have respect for writing statistics that are the opposite of what I just said, that are completely false. That I don't know where they get this from. It's just nonsense. It's nonsense. The statistics about deaths and people that are ill. I mean, you can't. Even if you want to say, well, they're exaggerating. So what? Instead of 90%, it's 85%? What are they exact? First, I don't believe they're exaggerating. But even if you want to contend that they're exaggerating, what you mean, 85% of the people that are ill, and it really is more than 90%. I mean, you have places like Israel, where the unvaccinated are only 15 to 20% of the population, and over 90% of the sick people and the dying people. I mean, how foolish can we be? So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I understand that there'd be a certain reluctance from some people because children are not likely to become seriously ill from this, but they can make other people seriously ill. So I think it's a serious question. I don't have, as far as children, young children getting vaccinated, I don't know. I can't give you a definitive answer to that because I'm not a doctor. And I can't give you a definitive answer. But I can tell you one thing. Adults should certainly get the vaccine. That's for sure. That there's no question about. Thank you, Dr. Dan, and I want to thank everybody else for another program of Ask JTF, which, of course, I very much enjoy doing with our great JTFers. Before we end the program, I want to give people an opportunity here people ask me how they can contribute to the Hilltop Youth. So I want to give people an opportunity to be able to do that. There are two things you can do if you want to help the Hilltop Youth. One is go to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. That's hayamin.org. And there, through PayPal, you can make a contribution online. It's very easy to do. It just takes a couple of minutes. And you can help these heroic Jewish pioneers that are our hope for stopping a so-called Palestinian state. And that's one way, that's online. The other way to do it is through checks and money orders that you can send through the regular mail. And you just send the checks and money orders to JTF PO Box 650327. That's JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. If we fight together as a team, we can change Jewish history and we can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.